It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every single game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. It's guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks, all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Stewart and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
B-Pod Studios.
This is WWE Superstar Roman Reigns, and you are listening to Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley, two great members of the Kowloon crew. Mike, remember, this is Jay Stu's yard, brother.
I want to start out with a little exercise this week. I mentioned this on last week's show as kind of a passing comment about The Undertaker being overrated and he wouldn't be in my top 10 of wrestlers since 1990. And Mike Riley, you took exception to this comment. So let's flush this out into a full conversation.
Sure.
And the preamble is, I think 5 of the 10 wrestlers that are going to be on our list will be the same.
Yeah.
So we're likely talking about the bottom 5 of a top 10 list. So Mike Riley, you get to start.
Mm-hmm.
Give me your top 10 wrestlers since 1990. And by the way, the order doesn't really matter.
Okay. Yeah. And this was, I asked you a few times on this, like, how do you want to do this? Do you want to base it on, I don't know, like wins or championships?
On whatever you deem is your personal top 10 wrestlers since 1990.
There you go.
The criteria is up to you. It's left general. And so hopefully that there's some debate points and it's actually an interesting podcast instead of, well, we have the same list, so this exercise was useless.
No, but still, it was really difficult for me because that's a long period of time there. 30 years, as you know, promotions, and I'm pretty much based mine on the WWE, the WCW, and ECW as the big guys right there. However, fully admitting that I have been a mainly WWE, WWF fan my whole life, they took a lot of precedence here on this one. So the top 5, no particular order. Let me just list it off here. This is where James and I are in agreement. Stone Cold Steve Austin, right?
Yep.
Hulk Hogan, The Rock, Ric Flair, John Cena. Okay.
Yep. That's the top 5. That is the correct five. You know, no debate. Those are five top 10 wrestlers.
Yep. So here we go. For my bottom, well, second half of it right there of the top 10, I went Bret the Hitman Hart. Then I went Shawn Michaels. Then I went Chris Jericho. Then I went, I put The Undertaker in there because I can't.
You had to. You were forced into a take.
Yes, exactly. This is where I had a really hard time to round up my top 10. I really had a hard time with this, but I ended up going with Sting. I almost... Ugh. I knew you're going to hate that. Yes.
This is good, though, because it's a debate point.
So I really was a flip of the coin, Jimmy. Sting or Kurt Angle? And I'm like, you know what? Sting, but I put Kurt Angle. He's like number 11 for me.
Okay, so we're not doing 11.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying he's
we're not
right
doing
there.
Honorable mentions. I know you want to. We're not doing that. The whole point of 10 is to make it difficult in the same way that the Mount Rushmore is 4.
Yep.
So
very tough.
Hogan,
30
Austin,
years.
Rock, Cena, Flair, like you would have to drop one if we're only picking 4.
Absolutely.
So, okay. So Chris Jericho. So I will flag Undertaker.
Yep.
We'll get back to this because I'll give you my list in a second.
All right.
So I will flag Undertaker.
Yep.
I have already flagged Sting.
I know you have
Sting. You Sting on your own time, but
okay.
Bret Hart is not on my list, and I will not flag because I'm a Bret Hart honk, and I will not be fighting against Bret Hart.
Okay.
Shawn Michaels is not in my top 10, and I will not flag him because I'm okay with Shawn being on that top 10 list.
Yeah.
He's not on mine, but I'm okay with him being on yours.
Okay.
Interesting. And I'm not a Shawn Michaels guy, so like yeah. Bret Hart all the way.
Oh, yeah.
So Taker and Sting will be the two that I flag and we debate. I'm surprised Chris Jericho is on your list because you just got into Chris Jericho more recently.
Well, I respect him, though. I respect him. And that's why, you know, inaugural undisputed champion, inaugural AEW champion, nine-time Intercontinental champion, too.
Ten-time Intercontinental champion. He won the New Japan IC title.
Oh, okay. Forgotten. So there you go. Even better point. But I respect the hell out of him. I think it's awesome what he's done. It's still going 30 years in the business. That's amazing. You know?
All right. So here's my top 10 list.
Yeah.
And we'll get back to, and we'll go through
Taker and Sting.
You know, Taker and Sting on my end, and you flag whoever you'd like on my end.
Let's hear it.
So we agree Hogan, Austin, Rock, Cena, Flair, Jericho. Yep. So there's six.
Yep.
Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, he's an honorable for me.
Daniel Bryan.
Okay.
CM Punk.
Yep.
And Mick Foley. Those are my other four. Any of those you want to flag?
You put Daniel Bryan. So I'm just basing this on the criteria here. Like, I'm trying to figure out your criteria, and I can't figure out, like, are you doing this based on favorite, or are you basing it on?
I am basing it on full body of work as far as longevity of a performer, and I'm not using WWF only as a criteria. I'm not using just WCW as a criteria. In the case of CM Punk and Daniel Bryan, I think that they did it their way.
Yeah, so that's right. I'll flag in.
And they should be rewarded for the fact that they broke through the WWE system doing it their way. And did they have top runs for 10 years on top beating the WWE system? They did not. But I think their full body of work from the ground up through different territories, through different promotions, and then getting to, in the case of Daniel Bryan, main event a WrestleMania. In the case of CM Punk, having a 434-day run as WWE champion and having what many would consider the greatest match of the last 10 years, Money in the Bank Chicago 2011, where he beats John Cena for the WWE championship in a match where we couldn't call. And it led to him for the month prior when he drops the, quote, pipe bomb promo and running through that run of becoming from an indie darling to a mainstream star. I think that's why I would have Punk on my top 10 list.
See, okay. Now I respect it, but that's where I would flag you on that.
Sure.
And I'm just basing that around of a 30-year period where I think some of the guys that I have on my list or, you know, other ones that are honorable mentions deserve a top 10 spot. Where CM Punk, I think, was such like, I mean, yeah, he had it. It was awesome what he did and everything, but it was a short period of time. And it was just like a 2-year window there. And don't get me wrong, that was an awesome match at Money in the Bank against John Cena. It was great what he did with Vince McMahon with the ice cream bars and the contract dispute and all that. He had an awesome run in the independent circuit. He was great for Nexus and so forth. But again, I think there are other guys that you could put in that spot of the top 10. Kurt Angle would be in there for me in a heartbeat over CM Punk. Another guy I think you could very easily slide into that spot. Listen, you can. He's not in my top 10, but you could very. I'd put him ahead of CM Punk. Triple H. I'd put Triple H ahead of CM Punk in that scenario right there. I'd also throw in Eddie Guerrero as another possibility right there ahead of CM Punk. He doesn't crack the top 10 for me. Now, again, I think he's fantastic on the microphone, but he's not in that caliber there for me for the duration. I think the duration's a real big thing for me in this time period, 30 years. That was a huge part of my deciding factor here on this.
So if you look at the career of CM Punk, his run at the top of the WWE was very short.
Yes.
but his path to get there, he was making an impact, and he was termed an indie independent darling.
Yep.
So he had 60-minute matches with Samoa Joe and Ring of Honor, which helped to put that promotion on the map. He was a trainer in Ring of Honor, so the CM Punk wrestler tree kind of spread out a little bit for the people who went through the Ring of Honor dojo. Then when CM Punk did sign with WWE, he signed his contract on the Ring of Honor championship while he was the champion, which put further buzz on two promotions because he signs with WWE. So there's a buzz there that, oh, wow, they're signing CM Punk.
Right.
And Ring of Honor, it's like, oh, wow, he's still the Ring of Honor champion and he's signing a WWE contract. Mm-hmm. So then he goes to WWE and he's stuck in Ohio Valley Wrestling to learn the system, which he didn't actually need to learn. But while he was down there, he learned how to do TV, and he became a Paul Heyman guy while in Ohio Valley Wrestling.
Right.
So then he gets the main roster, and he's a top draft pick for the newly launched ECW brand. And the buzz around CM Punk, who's a babyface for really the first time in his career, even though his story with Raven in Ring of Honor had him as the straight edge guy, but he's the bad guy. And so going through Ohio Valley, then he gets to ECW. Then there's a lot of focus on ECW because CM Punk is the new toy in the WWE brand of ECW.
Okay. Yep. No.
And so people followed that, and then he eventually got the title after a long push. And then he became the, I don't want to say victim of Paul Heyman, because Paul was fighting for him to tap out Big Show at that horrible ECW December to dismember.
Right.
But it part of that ECW run, there was a groundswell of like, CM Punk's better than the spot that he's in. And so he got more fan support. And then he gets to the main roster, and he's a white meat good guy. He wins two Money in the Banks, back-to-back Money in the Banks at WrestleMania. He cashes in and wins on both. The first one was, I would consider the moment was great where Batista beats up Edge and Punk cashes in on Edge. And then he doesn't even lose it. He gets knocked out of the match, and Chris Jericho ends up winning some 6-pack challenge, I think it was, or 5-man cluster bleep of a show. I forget what they exactly called it, but he doesn't even get beat to lose the title. So then you fast forward, he gets another Money in the Bank, and then he cashes in on Jeff Hardy.
Yep, yep.
He cashes in on Jeff Hardy, who everybody loves. And CM Punk, who's supposed to be the good guy, now comes out and he's full-on straight edge.
Yep.
And eventually they get the title off him in a program with The Undertaker, where The Undertaker gained respect for CM Punk through that program.
Yep.
And then he does the Straight Edge Society, which was the best stuff that was going on SmackDown. Then he should have had the main event of WrestleMania that year in Atlanta, the worst WrestleMania of all time. But instead, he has a fabulous match with Randy Orton on that show.
Yep.
And then
so under the radar that match. Yeah.
And then you kind of push through, and it eventually gets to the point where his contract is coming up, and Cena's like, I want to work with him. And then they work it out, and they put the title on him, and he had a 434-day run. He gets the DVD. He gets mainstream publicity for his pipe bomb promo, all that stuff. And then he walks out of WWE. He quits.
Yeah.
And he becomes a bigger legend and a star. And people to this day are still clamoring for CM Punk to make an in-ring return, which I don't think is going to happen because the money's not right.
Right.
There's COVID. And I don't think he wants to wrestle.
Yeah.
But for that window of time, I always felt that there was a lot of buzz around CM Punk.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he never got his WrestleMania main event, I don't consider that a strike against Punk. I consider that a strike against the WWE system.
No, and that's a very fair argument. And again, you know, to your point of him with all of his accomplishments and so forth, doing that in such that short period of time, the thing where that helps him out tremendously too, he's such a great in-ring performer. And I'm not going against my argument here why he's not my top 10, but he is one of the greatest in-ring performers of our generation. I think a lot of people can agree to that. Over the last 10 years, he is one of the greatest ones that has stepped inside the squared circle in WWE. And that's why, you know, he could be in that conversation. But again, to my point, the duration, and I just don't see him. There are other guys that I, have in that spot ahead of Punk for a top 10. Personally, I could put him in my top 15, but he doesn't crack my top 10. And again, I think that he will go down as one of the greatest short-lived big splash superstars. Because when you think about it, too, there, Stone Cold Steve Austin, he actually had a short career, too, when you think about it, being at the top of the mountain. I mean, he won the championship in 1998, but he got hot in 96.
Yeah. When he cuts the pro, you know, people were thinking the King of the Ring thing, but the promo that I think really made him more mainstream was, if you put the letter S in front of Hitman, you've got my exact thoughts on Bret Hart.
Right.
It was the program with Bret Hart that made him.
And Bret Hart loved working with him. So I'd say that's about a good 3-year solid run, healthy Stone Cold Steve Austin before he gets hit by the car at the Survivor Series there. And here we are, CM Punk. Similar, a little shorter, though. And, I you know, that's just where I don't have him in that category. For
Mike, I can actually sum up the argument against CM Punk if you'd like me to.
Go ahead.
And then we can move on.
Sure. No, I respect your decision, though.
The argument against CM Punk is WrestleMania 29, The Rock and Cena are on top of Jericho and Punk for the title. If you look at CM Punk's run as champion, he had less main events. He was more underneath bigger match stuff. And then once The Rock came back, he took the title off him. And that was it for CM Punk, even though he had the match with The Undertaker at 29.
Which was an unbelievable match.
Which was the best match, but... Yeah, I mean, that's the argument, is that he was the champion in the same way that Daniel Bryan was the champion, but he wasn't the focus. And there's a difference when you're the champion versus when you have the focus. So that should have been your argument against CM Punk, but welcome for doing it for you.
Well, it was a little bit of both. I was 50%, all right? Now, the Daniel Bryan one, I'm not going to – surprisingly, I think you'd be surprised. I'm not going to flag you on that one. I'm going to flag you on Brock Lesnar, though.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks. And all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all 6 world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
And I'm going to say that because here he is, a part-time guy over the last few years. And that pissed me off to more than anything else, when you are a alleged champion and you can't defend the title, where you should have the title defended every single pay-per-view, in my opinion, as a fan. I think as a fan, you're getting robbed of that opportunity right there, where the top champion, the top person allegedly, is not having that given up for another individual there. Because there was a long period of time where Brock Lesnar was the WWE champion for like a 4 or 5 month stretch, and you didn't see him on TV at all. And it was like, this, where's the championship? I mean, this is ridiculous. So that really furious.
You saw Kevin Owens on TV every single week, and it didn't matter.
Right. By the way,
that Kevin Owens run is one of my favorite championship runs, but it didn't matter because it's the TV show over the prop, and that's what they will tell you. What I will tell you about the prop and why I have Brock Lesnar on this list is because since March 18th of 2002, he has been in the top spots of WWE. He has been focal points of stories. And in his younger days, The Rock wanted to put him over. The Undertaker wanted to put him over. There were people who just saw dollar signs because he has such a great athletic background. He can do so many different things in the ring. The knock on Brock Lesnar has always been his attitude about being about having to lose matches in his younger days because he's a legitimate athlete, NCAA champion, scholarships, all this stuff. But so when Vince McMahon saw Brock Lesnar, like that's his main event for the next however many years. Yep. And within his first year of being on the WWE roster, he's the champion and he's main eventing against Kurt Angle. And so if you can have a program with Kurt Angle and Kurt Angle respects you that much, and Kurt Angle should because he's got the amateur background, the Olympic gold medals, like that's a big deal. I mean, the only reason why Brock loses to Goldberg at WrestleMania 20 is because Vince is pissed that Brock wants to leave and Goldberg is the good guy.
Right.
But then fast forward to Brock goes to New Japan, wins their title, and then just leaves it in the dust. And then Brock comes back and he's programmed with Cena. He does business.
Yeah.
And then he's programmed with Triple H. He does business. Okay. We've got a new Brock Lesnar here. So now we can really do business with Brock Lesnar. And Brock Lesnar is the only person, in my opinion, hindsight being 2020, that could have beaten The Undertaker for that streak. He could handle the pressure of it. He could handle the heat that comes with it. And he's also a UFC champion. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of legitimacy beyond his amateur wrestling.
Yep.
And that's a main reason why Brock Lesnar is there. And I bet if you put total combined days with the belt, with the prop, the world championship, the universal championship, whatever it is, I bet that is a top, I'll say top seven in WWE history. And I haven't done the math. I probably won't do the math.
For the universal title you're talking about?
His days as universal / WWE champion.
Yep.
It's got to be over 1,000 days.
Oh, yeah, because he never defended the damn thing. And, you know, that's where I have a hard time putting him in that category there, like I said. Now, don't get me wrong. He's a draw. He's a very intriguing specimen. People are just amazed by his physique and so forth. And sure, I think the thing with Brock, too, Jimmy, is very early in his career, he peaked. I thought he peaked very early. You know, here he is. He beats The Rock at SummerSlam to win the title. Loses it. What did he lose it at? Survivor Series, and then wins the Rumble.
When Paul Heyman turned on him.
Right. Then he wins the Royal Rumble.
Right to here get in Boston.
Back. Exactly. He gets back at it. So he did, you know, revamp himself there. Or not revamp, put himself back in that top echelon of where he is as a champion. But, you know, when he left to go for the Minnesota Vikings, the NFL, and so forth, it's like, all right, this guy, you know, Vince threw a lot at you, man. And you know, and you're going to go out like that. And that he just got buried at WrestleMania 20. That was a terrible match. One of the worst matches of all time. Crowd was really hot, though, as we talked about before. But I think that Brock Lesnar, he's not, for me, he's not your full-time guy. And that's where I don't have the respect for him in the top 10 category where he is for you.
And that's perfectly fine. But what I would tell you is that Brock Lesnar has drawn more money combined than Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Sting and some of the people on your list.
Yeah, but Brock Lesnar has also drawn more money when the company has made more money.
Right.
Bret Hart.
That's how it is. You know, people don't want to talk about how Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were part of the lowest drawing era. Like Diesel gets blamed for, you know, not drawing very much. Nobody was drawing at that time.
That was
right?
A dark time.
But Brock Lesnar comes in and they're on the tail end of the Attitude Era, and WrestleMania 19 is their main eventing on top of Austin and Rock, McMahon and Hogan.
Yeah.
And Brock's still going, right?
Yep.
So now Brock comes back and Brock has given us more moments in the last, you know, so it would be since WrestleMania 30,
yep,
then I would argue any other performer.
Well,
you could cite more Brock Lesnar moments than you could probably any other performer.
Yeah.
So Brock beats The Undertaker at WrestleMania, right?
Yep.
Brock
beats Roman Reigns.
Brock destroys Roman Reigns on how many different occasions?
Yeah.
He destroys John Cena at a SummerSlam, and you get, you know, out of WrestleMania 31, you get Suplex City, bitch.
But that's where, so if
WWE bloodies Randy Orton in the middle of the ring.
Right. But so to your point here with him being in that moment there, you're going to remember him for the last 5-6 years, I guess you could say, as that main event guy and so
just
forth.
In more recent memory, but his early days of work were good. He was main eventing against Kurt Angle, which can't be understated. Like that's a big deal.
So
when he's the headliner of Hogan McMahon and Rock Austin 3, that's a big deal.
It's a huge deal when we thought it was Austin's last match, too. But Brock Lesnar, if they're going to be the guys that's going to have that of recent memory, then that's just lazy by WWE. They haven't found that. They tried to get Roman Reigns. They tried to find someone in that next, sorry to use that, to steal that name from Brock Lesnar, the next big thing. They weren't ready to find someone, so they had to rely back on him to fall back as, well, we can't find anyone to give us that next moment there, so let's just give it to Brock. Let's do that. That's lazy on WWE right there, not able to find someone, not able to develop someone in that echelon right there. And here he is, WrestleMania 35. He opened up WrestleMania 35, dropping the title to Seth Rollins, okay? 36, he loses to Drew McIntyre. So
he's doing business now.
Maybe the tide has turned. Maybe the tide has turned there. But during that period there, lazy by WWE. Lazy.
I don't think that Vince McMahon had confidence in anybody other than Brock to be an attraction and to be a draw.
Definitely.
And for that to happen, Brock needs the championship.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely that mystique guy, or you know, that definitely intriguing guy there to do that, but it just really disrespect for me as a fan. When you're a champion not defending the title, that is a disgrace as a fan.
So you want to flag Mick Foley on mine?
No, I actually agree with you, Foley. I'm okay with that one because he is what he has done, sacrificed his body, had some amazing match, 3 promotions too, by the way, over the 30-year career, maybe even 4 if you want to go to Japan as well.
I wasn't even going to talk about his Impact stuff.
Impact 2, there he goes. So that's amazing. So, and 3 different characters. Cactus Jack, Dude Love, Mankind, all a very talented. I can't flag Foley. I can't do it.
Oh,
so
okay.
Those are my
I had this whole thing because I figured Foley was going to be an easy flag for you. But
no, I actually had a hard time with that because Foley, I know you don't want to do the honorable mentions, but he's in my top 15. So right. He's right up there. But Daniel Bryan was interesting. I respect that one. I think that's a great run he had and exciting, too, like the little engine that couldn't. And here he is.
It's playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing. And FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, brand new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks. And all on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to FanDuel.com/Hardy. Make your first bet an automatic win with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline MA.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all 6 world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at Boston Scores. .org/Noah.
All right. So Taker we'll do last, but sure. I want to flag Sting. I want to hear your defense on Sting because Sting, I think, is here's my opening argument against Sting.
Go ahead. You've never been a Sting guy.
No, I've never been a Sting guy.
Yeah. So let's preface that.
And by the way, for full disclosure, because I was younger, when Sting beat Flair at the Great American Bash in 91, I did cheer it because I thought, like, the guy's coming back from a blown out knee in his wrestling year. Yeah. 1990, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
So I did cheer Sting, and then the Black Scorpion thing was terrible. But why I'm against Sting is because when it was just Sting and Luger, and Sting and Luger were fighting over the championship, it was terrible programming. Just awful. So the missing element is Ric Flair there. So now fast forward to Hogan comes into the promotion, and now Sting's doing this turn where he essentially did the Brock Lesnar schedule, where he was hanging out in the rafters. We weren't sure where he was going. And by the way, it was wonderful week to week being like, what's Sting going to do? But he didn't work for like 16 months.
Yeah.
And then he shows up to the biggest event in WCW history, and he's not tanned. He's not in shape. He's not ready to go. And it goes to this discussion creatively of like, what do we do here?
Right.
And so what should have been a squash of Sting over Hogan turns into a competitive match with a terrible finish because Nick Patrick counted the fall normally.
Right, right.
So Hogan's won.
Starrcade.
And they have to make Bret Hart look like a jackass for restarting a match that didn't have an issue with the count.
Yeah.
And so then Sting wins, and we all go nuts because that's the result that should have happened in the way that it should have happened. But then because Sting isn't tan and he's out of shape and he's not ready for the moment, they have to take the title off him.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Sting ever really recovered from that. So you've got two instances here in Sting's career where here's the ball, Stinger. Here you go. What are you going to do with it? Flops on both of it.
No, that's a fair argument on that one. The only reason I put, one of the main deciding reasons why I put him in my top 10, and again, this was very difficult between him and Kurt Angle, but Sting, I just did it more out of respect for the face of the WCW, because before the NWO came in there, before Hulk Hogan came in the mid-90s, Sting was the face of WCW. I don't care what people say, Ric Flair's up there, but everyone associated WCW with Sting. And, here you are, 30 years, and you talk about that match with Ric Flair at the American Bash. I thought it was a really good one in 1990. Flair right there was, still in his prime. It was for the NWA World Championship. That was a huge propel moment there for Sting in his career. His feud with Hogan, you talk about that at Starrcade 97. Just another, and that was the other thing too, like, are we ever going to see Sting and The Undertaker? We always had that in the back of our minds as fans and so forth. But, when he went black and white Sting with the crow look there, it just made it, obviously Hulk Hogan, the most hated guy, such a top heel. And for Sting to win that match right there, get that celebration, yes. I don't think he did fully recover in the WCW days. But you got to remember, though, he did have that match with Bret Hart for the United States Championship at the Halloween Havoc later in the year there. So,
God, Mike, that was a terrible match.
But he
you
did
want to talk about people who had clashing styles?
I actually liked that match. Now, Bret did retain. He did. But I actually enjoyed that match. I really did. I think anytime you're in the ring with Bret Hart, you're going to be okay. And he protected him. So, you know what? He did the best they could. And after that, that was pretty much the end of Sting's big... I can't... If someone thinks he had a better run after that in WCW, go ahead. I don't think anything else. But, he had a good little... he tried to redeem himself in the TNA. And I thought with the... who did he fight? Kurt Angle. Remember the Kurt Angle match in TNA? The feud there...
Fine.
No, but it again, top name guy, two top name guys right there, a former face of WCW against a future WWE Hall of Famer and Kurt Angle. They're both Hall of Famers now, and sure as heck enough.
Yes, Sting's 0-2 in WWE.
Which is awful. Which is, he got buried at WrestleMania 31. Absolutely buried.
Mike, name me your favorite Sting WCW championship run.
I really can't. but I'm just doing it out of respect for him. I am doing it out of respect for him being the face of the WCW. And I just, my favorite Sting match is the one against Ric Flair in 1990. That's my favorite match right there with the Great American Bash. Yeah, 1990. So that's my favorite run there. And I did enjoy him with the mystique of where's he going to be in the rafters and so forth. He's going to join NWO and all that. It was must watch television. But for what he did before Hulk Hogan came to the WCW and to feud with a guy like Ric Flair, and, you know, he was the face of that promotion, and WCW being the top competitor for the WWE, Sting helped keep WCW right in that category there for true competition of WWE.
All right, give me your Undertaker. Why is Undertaker a top 10 performer since 1990?
How could he not be? I mean, here we are.
Oh, I just told you how he could not be. I just listed 10 wrestlers better.
Well, let's be honest here. I mean, we knew he was undefeated up until the Brock Lesnar WrestleMania 30 match, okay? But The Undertaker here, if you want to hear all my hard-on stuff with him, go
yes,
back
I
to
do.
The art. Go
Make
back to the
case.
Art. I'm telling
Make
the people.
Me believe that The Undertaker is a top 10 performer of the last 30 years.
I'm just telling the people, go back to the archives of July of 2020, The Undertaker episode here. But The Undertaker, though, he has always been a loyal guy to the company of Vince McMahon. We know that. Top, he can be at the main event. He could be middle of the card if you really wanted him to. He could be a second to last match of the night, and people are still interested in that. You just mentioned that in the CM Punk match right there at WrestleMania 29. That was the match of the night before the main event. Undertaker has always had that mystique. He has always had that character. People are always intrigued by his figure. He has been a staple in the WWE. He has been a champion when he needed to be one. He has been a main event guy. He's been a regular guy when he needs to be. Doesn't always need to be champion, but he is always one of the most, I guess people are always intrigued by him, and they always know that he is a main part of WWE. And for whatever, if you're going to a show, if you're able to see him, it's an absolute treat and an honor. He's feuded with Kane. He's feuded with Bret Hart. We've seen the great matches on him. We saw some great feuds with Shawn Michaels. I mean, go back to the real character, Yokozuna. Listen, Undertaker is right up there, top 10. He has deserved to be in that spot, and a lot of people put him on the Mount Rushmore of wrestling.
I don't know anybody who's put him on Mount Rushmore, because that's four.
The Rock. The Rock. He did.
The Rock did?
He just said it last week.
I missed that one.
But tweeted it out. He tweeted it out. He said he is in my Mount Rushmore of wrestling.
Do you know what my favorite match of the streak is, Mike?
Which one?
It's March 30th of 03. It's a handicap match at WrestleMania 19 against A-Train and Big Show. That's
like
how
that?
Important the streak was.
You like that match?
No, about, I'm being sarcastic.
Come on.
If The Undertaker is consistently so important and he's on a Mount Rushmore, why is he almost on the pre-show of a WrestleMania?
Well, that was a bad one. That was a bad spot to put him on that. They did not have him booked on that one. They're really good in that, because that was all about Austin and The Rock. It was all about Vince and Hulk Hogan. It was all about Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar. He shouldn't have. That was a really bad spot for him.
Do you remember the WrestleMania in Sky Dome, WrestleMania X8?
Yeah, he fought Ric Flair.
Ric Flair. Do you know that he was almost not booked on WrestleMania?
He was almost not booked on WrestleMania 17. Do you know that?
Exactly, I did. So The Undertaker is so important to the company the last 30 years that they almost didn't book him on three WrestleManias.
But
three WrestleManias in domes, by the way.
Yeah, but you know what? If you don't know the backstory on that, he was still there, and that's all that matters. He was on the card, and when history is said and done, oh, yeah, here, Undertaker fought this guy. Oh, yeah, Undertaker won. He had the streak up until 30. So he was there.
Cal Ripken was also there every day. Is he the greatest shortstop of all time? He's not.
Oh, gosh. Listen,
but if the Undertaker is this great performer and this Mount Rushmore performer long-term over the last 30 years, why for so long was he only wrestling one match a year towards his later days, right? One match a year. At least Brock gave you four, right?
Yeah, but Brock's not as old and rusty as a Taker.
Oh, he's not?
I don't think so. I don't think he's as old as Undertaker, is he?
Not right now, but...
Yeah, but...
I'd have to look at how old Taker was when he was wrestling one match a year when it started. I want to say it was around Shawn Michaels' time, which would have been the Reliant Stadium, the Houston WrestleMania. It was like 17-0, something like that. It was the first Michaels one. I think he started wrestling once a year. But at least Brock gives you four times, right? And they're close enough in age. But The Undertaker is so valuable to the company that he went, let's see, he won the title off of Hogan on a fluke in 91 at Survivor Series.
Hey,
and then he didn't touch the title again until WrestleMania 13.
So what?
That's how valuable he was.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you're a champion or not. He does. There are some guys that don't have to be a champion, and he is maybe in that ultimate conversation of guys that don't need to be in the category of champion. How did I forget the rival with Mankind? That was one of the greatest of all time. Hell,
yeah, it was all McCauley's work.
But still, it was great for everyone all involved. Hell in a Cell. What was the other one? The Boiler Room Brawl. You can go down the list here. They had the Buried Alive match, all the gimmick matches. Unbelievable rival there. And they worked so well together. Sure, I'm sure Mick Foley did the meat and potatoes of the work there and so forth, put over the Taker, made him look so much better. But great storytelling. Absolutely hooked on that. I hated Mankind. He was a thorn in the side of The Undertaker. Great storytelling, too, when Paul Bearer turns on The Undertaker and joins Mick Foley. Unbelievable. Storytelling, fantastic. Kane, the little brother, you can't beat it. It has been a staple of the company for 30 years. You don't need to be a champ. In fact, I don't even – I think I told you this on the thing we did on The Taker. I never really enjoyed him as champion because it just put so much pressure on him. I always liked to have him go for the chase as a champion or just being where he was in that part of the card.
My final point will be this.
Go ahead.
Vince McMahon's greatest character creation, and he didn't push for him to be the WWF champion more. That's something that should be a flag.
But
because if this is Vince McMahon's greatest creation, which is what so many people have said,
yeah,
wouldn't you want him to do the corporate events? Wouldn't you want him to do all these meet and greets and be the face of the WWE?
Well, that's a conversation to have.
He did the most press and interview stuff during the last 6-8 months. When his career was winding down, that should tell you a lot about what Vince McMahon actually thinks of his greatest creation.
Yeah, because he wanted him to be a gimmick all the time. And he was, right? Do you want a dead man going around taking a picture with kids, like scaring the hell out of them? Come on, in a casket? Get out of here. He lived the gimmick. He lived it as best as anyone ever could. It is perfect. It is so believable. That's why he's the greatest creation of all time, where you don't have to do all the press and so forth. Like, he's a dead man. He doesn't have any friends, right?
He had Paul Bearer.
Yeah, but besides that, who were his allies?
His brother Kane?
Well, for a little bit, but then he turned on him and so forth. They've turned on each other, and then they...
And he had a Ministry of Darkness, and then he had a corporate ministry.
Oh, that was terrible. I hated that run. I hated that run right there. But the only time I could really consider Taker having, like, real friends was Survivor Series 93. Lex Luger and the Steiner brothers. That's really it. You know? So, fair point, though. Fair point by you with the not being a champion. But to my point, a character like that, it's the mystique. It's the intrigue. He does not need to be a champion.
I mean, now, WrestleMania 13, he only got the belt because he didn't want to put it back on Brett. And Shawn lost his smile. And Austin, it was too soon. I mean, that's fourth in line.
Yeah, but he beat Sid Justice, which was
fine. He's like, oh, it's WrestleMania 13. Oh, man. I don't want to put it on Brett. Sean's lost his smile because he didn't want to lose to Brett.
He did put it on. He did put it on Brett. He put it on Brett at SummerSlam that year.
He did after Brett got hot.
Yeah, and then also...
But at the time, he didn't want to put it back on Brett because Sean didn't want to lose to him. He didn't want... Vince didn't want Sean to lose to Brett. It was something like that.
Yeah, and good job, because Brett gave us the greatest WrestleMania match of all time with Stone Cold Steve Austin, so I was fine with that.
It worked out well.
Now, can I just ask you real quick a quick caveat here?
Sure.
If I had put Kurt Angle...
And then we'll do some new stuff.
I know, I'm sorry, yeah. But if I had put Kurt Angle instead of Sting, would you have flagged that?
No, not at all.
Ah, damn it. Okay, so I was this close to doing Kurt, but I was like, I got to do Sting, though, out of respect. I really had a hard time defending Sting, really did. But it was that close for Kurt Angle. So
yeah, I wouldn't have liked it at all, but that would have ruined the show. So I'm glad you put Sting on there.
Hey, that was fun though. And that was very difficult.
It wasn't hard. I don't understand why having an opinion on something is so hard, but it seems like in this industry, it's like difficult. It's like,
well, 30 years, top 10 guys. I'm just saying, to really nail it all down. I shouldn't say
it's the Hall of Fame, Mike. Like, you either know a Hall of Famer or you don't.
That's fair. I just thought, like, there were so many guys to choose from, and considering we already had our five in there, and it's just, I wanted to really, you know, narrow it down, do the best I could. And it was tough to choose some spots here for the Hall of Fame vote. There you go. Now, Charlotte didn't make your cut, huh?
She didn't, because her career is not over. No. I was sticking specifically to male gender.
Okay. Understood.
Because in 30 years, like, the women's division for WWE is kind of in sections, right?
Right.
So,
Divas.
There's the Trish Lita era. Yeah. There's the Moolah Sherry era, which there's the Alondra Blaze era. And then there's the more recent Four Horsewomen Ronda Rousey era.
Right, right.
So if we're going to have a longer term discussion about that, we need more of a time frame to do it.
Right.
And whereas more males have been on top, that's why I went just male gender on this.
Yeah, and Charlotte, I mean, she was in the conversation for me here, but when I really did all the math, it was more like top 20, you know?
But Charlotte will go down as the number one female of all time.
Probably.
And then your number two would probably shock a lot of people. I would put Sherry Martel as number two.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Sherry Martel is a performer who didn't get enough wrestling mainstream promotion in WWF.
Yeah.
But if you look at her whole body of work and what she could do around the territories, and when she finally became the WWE ladies champion, and then she switched over to being a manager.
Yeah.
And she was one of the most active managers out there.
Oh yeah.
Her body of work, there's a strong argument from my behalf that she would be the number two female woman performer of all time behind Charlotte.
Interesting. All right. Conversation for another day. I like it.
Yes. When we have more details to work with, when this era of women's wrestling is a little bit further along.
Yes. Sounds good.
So now some news.
Let's go.
And the rest of the story. I think my biggest kind of takeaway is what a beautiful NXT championship match we saw this week. Finn Balor defeats Adam Cole in what I would describe just a beautiful wrestling match. It might be the best match of the pandemic, empty arena era that we're in. It was at the start of the show. So while I knew it wasn't going 2 hours, I thought, well, maybe it'll go an hour, which it's Adam Cole and Finn Balor, so they can do it and it can be great. I truly did not know who was going to win or how they were going to win. And that, I think, is what I loved. The matches you can't call are always the best matches.
Yeah.
And Cole and Balor, they're professionals. And Tuesday night was just a thing of beauty for me. And I was happy to see Balor win the title. And it just leads to more speculation that Adam Cole is going to SmackDown or Raw.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that's where I said that last week here, too, that it makes sense for Balor to win. But I wouldn't have been shocked if Adam Cole had won, too. I think if Adam Cole had won, then that would have cemented him as the greatest NXT champion of all time. But, you know, with Finn Balor, what's that, his second NXT?
Second run.
Yeah, and that's really impressive, too. Almost like a revamp of his career, to where he was, you know, the first Universal Champion and, you know, making the rebound here. So I'm excited to see what he can do. And I think that's a good move for WWE, putting the title on him right now with the uncertainty of no crowd for we don't know how much longer. And also, you know, I know we're going to talk about this at Raw because I have some thoughts on that as well. But they have to, I think it's important for them to have a name like Finn Balor as champion for NXT right now during this time period without a crowd, and to keep getting those ratings there, to keep the interest level alive for the product.
So let's talk about Raw.
Yeah. Very excited about this.
There are two things that interest me this week. Drew McIntyre is fighting Keith Lee. for the first time ever in a WWE for Monday Night Raw, right?
Yep, yep.
My concern, and it's already a concern, is Vince doesn't understand Keith Lee. So he's putting him in this match with McIntyre, and this will be the only time we see the match.
The only?
And I hope that that's not true, but it's a big concern of mine. Because Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre, if promoted properly for the next 7-8 months, or built to in the next 7-8 months, this is a WrestleMania caliber match.
Yes.
For where we are in wrestling right now. And so I don't want to see it wasted on a random Monday Night Raw on September 14th.
Well, let's just pause there for 1 second, because not only is this a random Monday Night Raw for September 14th, this is a critical Monday Night Raw for September 14th, because
dun, it's dun, dun, dun.
Thank you. You got it. And then what's 2 weeks away? The first debate. I know it's on a Tuesday night, but still we're here in election season. So they are going outside. They're going to throw everything at you here. So I am very excited for Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre. And sure, to your concern there, that it may be the only time these two do fight, I hope it's not the case as well. But you could so easily set up a good, even if they do fight this one time here, just set up a good turn on each other, because they both have the respect for each other. Like I said, in the storyline here, the workout partners and so forth and friends and everything, one of them turn on each other and just go at it for, or maybe kayfabe an injury, something over the next couple of months, come back and get the, you know, the revenge match. I'd be fine with that. So give me more of Keith Lee and Drew McIntyre.
It really depends on how they do the finish. I suspect they'll do a non-finish to protect the match in the future.
Yeah.
But my biggest concern is that Vince McMahon doesn't understand Keith Lee.
Yeah, I hope he doesn't throw him out.
Even though the argument is, well, pal, he's in there with the champion. Of course I believe in him. But that's not always
well. The other thing
how
is,
it feels like Vince operates.
Yeah, but the other reason why Vince might actually believe in Keith Lee, and we know that Vince is, he loves the size. You know, he's a big, big guy, and I think that's going to really work to his advantage to have him in that top main event caliber right there.
The other thing that interests me is Mandy Rose is now on Raw.
Oh my God, brilliant.
And it makes me think, is Otis going to follow Mandy to Raw somehow? And this is my thinking out loud. Randy Orton beats Drew McIntyre, Clash of Champions, which I don't want to happen, by the way.
Okay.
But then it furthers the argument, oh, Randy Orton's got so many title reigns, he's got to be considered the greatest of all time. Neat. Otis then cashes in on Randy Orton.
You mean Randy Orton's on your top 10?
No. And by the way, there's an argument for Randy Orton. I'm not going to make it.
No, I was just giving the layup. Sorry.
So now Otis is the WWE champion on Raw and is reunited with Mandy Rose, because you won't see it coming. That was SummerSlam. Sorry. So that's just my thinking out loud thing. And also, for the record, I'm not advocating that Drew McIntyre loses the WWE championship. I'm right. Just trying to think of interesting stories that they can tell. And just to be clear, like, Drew McIntyre shouldn't lose the title at the earliest WrestleMania 37 unless you have such a compelling story to take it off him, like Orton to Otis, and then Otis is on Raw and Mandy. But I still think the right play for the Otis cash-in is him handing the briefcase to Mandy Rose and Mandy Rose capitalizing on it and becoming women's champion.
So I never thought of it that way, and you know, that's why you got the mind like that there, thinking about that. But I don't know. I think the move here for Mandy Rose to the Monday Night Raw brand is to push her, you know, for that women's division there, because I think the Raw side is really weak right now for the women's side, because you now have Shayna Baszler in the tag team. Why am I blanking? Help me out here. I just had some, who's your tag team partner? Come on, help me out here, Jimmy.
Sony Deville.
Sony, thank you. Thank you. Gosh.
No, it's Nia Jax.
Nia Jax.
Shayna Baszler's tag team partner is Nia Jax.
Yeah, Sony Deville,
they're the champions.
Yes, but Sony Deville is getting the push, though, on Raw for the, you know, top singles competitor.
Sony Deville is out of action right now.
Then who's the other, not Peyton Royce. Is it Peyton Royce? What? Who's the top one?
One of the Iconics.
Yeah, it's, oh gosh. See, this is where, this is my point. Monday Night Raw women's division is weak right now. And Mandy Rose makes perfect sense to be at the top right there. It makes perfect sense because Shayna Baszler, I think, was supposed to be that one right there to fill that void while Becky Lynch was out. And it's not the case. She wasn't ready to go. Had a tough.
No, she was ready. Vince just doesn't like her.
Well, she can't be in that spot. There you go. Because Vince doesn't like her. He salivates over Mandy Rose, just like all of us right here. So I think that's the perfect situation for her to be as the Raw Women's Champion right now. And listen, you got to put a splash out there. She's gorgeous. She's God's greatest creation. So it makes perfect sense going up against Monday Night Football. It makes perfect sense right now when people are not watching Monday Night Raw, but you can have Mandy Rose right there. That's a huge deal. Huge. Smart.
I think Mandy can work a little bit too.
Absolutely. And one more thing I'm looking forward to. Listen, you can laugh at me all you want. I think you're going to be really surprised. Dominic and Seth Rollins, steel cage match. Give me Dominic, baby. All in on this guy.
Do you know why? Because Seth Rollins can work with a broomstick.
Which sucks. I know, and it kills me to say that.
Seth Rollins has arguably been the best thing on Monday Night Raw this year.
And again, you know how I
and Seth Rollins does nothing for you and Joe Murray.
Yeah,
you
and that's
guys hate Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
And the Monday Night Messiah has done some of his best work the last nine months.
I mean, it's, I don't know. I'm so over
I'm
that.
I'm sorry that you can't admit that. That's not my fault.
No,
that's not my fault. You were wrong.
But listen, I'm not into the character. But you know what? He can work. And I think Dominic and him had a great match.
You just turned Dominic into something interesting.
So
who
give
else
me a,
does that on this roster?
No one. No one.
But that, not, but that, but Seth Rollins, the Messiah, doesn't interest you, but you're interested in the Dominic match.
Give me it.
And the Rey Mysterio match.
I'm so out on that character, Seth Rollins. So okay. Give me Dominic, baby. Give me him.
Seth Rollins made you a believer in Dominic Mysterio. It's good for you.
Hey, I admit it.
So SmackDown was good again, and it got its highest rating in like 6 months. Overnight rating in like 6 months. You know why? Because it was good. It was really good. SmackDown's been good.
So, yeah, the one last week I thought, like we talked about, we really canonized that one. This one was good. I thought the opening was a little, all right. But overall, it was a good show, though. It wasn't as good as last week, but it was still pretty good.
So Bayley detailing her turn on Sasha Banks, which is how I felt it would play out. I told you how it would play out.
Yep.
Or if I didn't go into details, I'm telling you because I've become the a-hole I told you so guy lately. Nikki Cross wins a shot at Bayley, which I assume is either going to be a non-title change finish or Nikki Cross won't make it to the match. The Alexa Bliss Fiend storyline still interests me. The Roman Reigns, Paul Heyman stuff. Oh, this is so
phenomenal.
Good.
Phenomenal.
This is just so good. And the three-way Intercontinental Championship stuff. But the Roman Paul Heyman stuff, the tone of the promos, Heyman clearly stating that Roman ordered Heyman to get Jey Uso into the match.
Mm-hmm.
So the WWE has an interesting situation on its hands. Do they deliver a 20-minute classic match that we know that Jey Uso and Roman Reigns can have? Or do they have Roman show up and destroy his cousin family member in 3 minutes? They could do some sort of combination where they have this great 20-minute match. They go to shake hands, and Roman just beats the hell out of Jey Uso. So they could do both. I don't know that that's best that they do both, but they could. But this really could have match of the year potential on it because they're both phenomenal. But I don't know that them having that 20-25-minute match for the championship is the best for Roman's character.
Right.
Because the best for Roman's character is, like he did in the tag team match, show up, tag in, spear, win, and walk away.
Yeah.
And Roman and Heyman, it could continue the story of, if Roman Reigns will do this to his own family, to his own blood, to keep the Universal Championship, what won't he do going forward?
Right.
And that's why this is so interesting. This is why this is so good.
Right, right. And to get that push right there, main event, cousin storyline, yes. And that's where, like I said last week here on the show, that I think it makes perfect sense just to have this as a absolute demolition on behalf of Roman Reigns, beating up his cousin, Jey Uso, here in this. But give us a good match. Maybe he gives him a little fight. Kind of like, listen, the unexpected, but it's not going to happen, i.e., Jeff Hardy Undertaker 2002 Monday Night Raw, okay? On that ladder match there, gave it your all, but didn't win. So I could totally see something like that, but just to build up that character of Roman Reigns beating his own flesh and blood, and then if we get the crowd back for WrestleMania, you have the return of The Rock.
So I have this gripe about AEW that I just have to get off my chest. And then,
oh, please.
You know, we'll get the go-home cues in. As it relates to All Elite Wrestling, the artist formerly known as Rusev, now known as Miro, which is his real name,
yep,
the best man, because he showed up as the best man for the marriage of Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford. And what did he do his opening promo? He rips WWE. So is this a fraternity thing now? You leave WWE, you go to AEW, and then you bash WWE, and then make sure that people know that you came from WWE and that you're bitter about it? If Miro doesn't mention WWE again, fine. You can look back at it. You can make fun of the take, the bitterness, the angriness. But right now, and in a lot of these cases, people, performers are justified in their bitterness. But yep. Do I have to hear it every single time from every performer? You've got Cody bashing a throne. Fine. It's a one-off. But then he keeps going back to it. Moxley is generally never happy. So his 7 hours of interviews post-leaving WWE, I kind of expected. But does everybody have to do this? And by the way, this isn't just germane to AEW talent. We love Mike and Maria Bennett. I know they were wronged in WWE, and I know a lot of details as to why they were wronged in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
But does everything have to be anti-WWE? Like, I know that when they started in WWE and debuted on WWE TV, they were going to have a program with Sami Zayn, and then WWE would see what happens. And in their conversation on the Ring of Honor podcast, they mentioned how a week after they started, they were bumped to WWE Digital. So Vince didn't like the idea of Mike Bennett becoming Mike Kanellis because Mike took Maria's last name.
Right.
So Vince didn't like his own idea, even though Vince came up with it. Right?
Yeah.
So fast forward. It was 3 years, and Mike is working house shows. His contract is up. Maria's active on Twitter mentioning that their contracts are coming up.
Right.
So WWE backs up the Brinks trucks for both of them, and they get TV time because Paul Heyman loves them. And I know that Mike wanted out and Maria wanted to stay and
right.
all that stuff because Maria wanted redemption from her first run.
Right.
But the money's too good to turn down, and now they're on screen. And Maria has to announce to the world in the middle of a match with Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch that she's pregnant, and she's on the early side of being pregnant, which is a concern. It's a major concern, and there's a lot of anxiety, and there's a lot of fear that if you announce it too early and something happens, because you're not supposed to announce, I think it's after 12 weeks. I think if I remember correctly, it's 12 weeks.
Right.
So I get it. Mike and Maria didn't like their creative. They couldn't get a change, but they went out there and they did the best they could.
Mm-hmm.
And they're kind of at the forefront trying to make the internal workings of WWE better, which the WWE culture is really strange. And I admittedly thought that it was just like, oh, it's a Vegas fun night culture, but it's really a lot darker than what we know. And a lot of that came out during the speaking out movement of a few months ago.
Of course.
And it's, by the way, it's worth mentioning that Mike Bennett is fighting Nick Aldis for the NWA Championship September 15th. And I hope Mike wins. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
But going back to the talent who didn't get to the main event of the WWE or didn't get the WWE title, they blame the system. And the system is messed up. But if talent does what it's supposed to and maximizes their TV time, there's a chance that they can beat the system. Becky Lynch beat the WWE system. Daniel Bryan beat the WWE system.
Right.
CM Punk, to a degree, beat the WWE system. Even for one night, Zack Ryder beat the WWE system because he won the Intercontinental title in Dallas at WrestleMania 32 in front of 100,000 fans. So if Zack Ryder can beat the system, then you can beat the system and at least have your moment. You know, and Zack Ryder's legacy in WWE to the hardcore fans is how WWE presents their digital presentation, their YouTube, their social media. That's all stuff Zack Ryder was doing years ahead of WWE.
He was way ahead of the game.
Using social media. And they didn't like it because they didn't see Zack Ryder as a main event player.
Right.
And they were kind of forced into it.
Yep.
So back to Rusev. Rusev comes out in a tank. In a tank. It was one of the coolest entrances in WrestleMania history at WrestleMania 31.
Right.
He comes out in a friggin' tank, and it's cool, but he loses to John Cena.
Yeah.
But it's WrestleMania, and John Cena's a good guy, so John Cena has to win.
Right,
right. Because that's Vince.
Yep, yep.
So what happens after that is Rusev loses two more pay-per-views to John Cena.
Right.
WWE's biggest good guy, even if John Cena's on the back end of being that good guy. So Rusev, wait for it, is a bad guy here.
Mm-hmm.
So when Hulk Hogan was beating the Big Boss Man and the Million Dollar Man and Mr. Perfect and Kamala and Mr. Wonderful, was anybody bitching about that on the grand scale? Well, no, because we didn't have social media.
Right.
But we all went to the show to see Hulk Hogan do his entrance, sell for 10 minutes, kick out of the other guy's finish, Hulk up, three punches, boot, leg drop, Hogan must pose.
Right.
And we all loved it.
Yep.
And the vast majority of the fans loved seeing John Cena doing that.
Yep.
But the lower percentage of fans who all saw the talent in Rusev, they thought he should have been world champion at some point. And maybe he should have been world champion. But whatever metric that they use, whatever formula that Vince McMahon knows and has drawn money on, and sure, it can be adjusted.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't see Rusev as the world champion.
Right.
And admittedly, Vince didn't understand Rusev Day. And they had different perspectives. But Rusev Day was never supposed to get a world championship match. And Rusev did. And he lost. But it's Vince's system of how do they present to you the stories.
Yep.
And I go back to the Road Dogg tweet after SummerSlam when Becky popped Charlotte in the mouth after Charlotte won the women's title. And Road Dogg said something to the effect of, well, that's not the story we're telling you. So this is the bigger point of the WWE system and the bitterness that seems to come from the system that I'm just tired of hearing about.
Yeah.
WWE told fans that it's about you, the WWE universe. It's an in-ring thing. It's Triple H. It's Stephanie. It's Vince. They went public and they empowered fans. So when singular fans get upset because they don't get what they want, they bitch about it. And now performers feel the same way about publicly bitching about them. And they should, and if they want to bitch about it, that's fine. But at what point do you go to another company and say, WWE's behind me. I'm done with them. Here's my new path to success. So it's a long way of saying that the WWE has issues within their system. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows about them.
Right.
I'm tired of hearing about them. And it's starting to become a turnoff for me for performers. And it's not turn off the TV, but it's just really annoying. And I hope that Rusev, Miro has a great run in AEW. I hope that Cody and all of them, they have great runs in AEW. But do they have to come out and dump on their past performer? Bobby Heenan never did that.
No.
Bobby Heenan went to WCW and never said a bad word publicly about WWE, WWF. So why is it that everybody has to next? Is it to get a cheap pop? Well, there are no fans. There were 10% of that building the other night, and they popped for it.
Right.
But like, can we move on? Can we move forward?
Yeah. And
end of rant.
No, and that's a lot to digest there. It's some good stuff to.
That's take. A lot to unpack, Mike Riley.
It is, and on that note, you're not wrong. It's happened a lot in the past. I mean, look at Hulk Hogan the night he went NWO, the night he joined the Outsiders there, that company up north, and so forth. And you know, I made them money, and now you know a little behind. Backhanded sort of thing there on that, but not as vicious as here
but
we are.
But he wasn't saying, Vince McMahon, you suck. He was saying, Vince McMahon, I made you a lot of money.
Correct.
There's a difference.
Correct. But that's what I'm saying. It's not as bad as these guys now where they're just so outspoken. And that's the question here are these guys just a bunch of spoiled brats? You know, they live in, we're in the trophy generation of people here, Jimmy, where everyone gets their way. And if they don't get their way in how they wanted it in Vince McMahon's world, then they're going to go bitch on TV and you just burned a bridge on potentially returning down the line. Maybe. Doesn't look good. So the power of social media is a big tool for these guys to utilize to their advantage. And obviously, with so much more exposure nowadays, they take advantage of that. And again, if you're not happy, just bite the bullet. You got a great opportunity. You work for the, you know, the most recognizable company in the world for professional
wrestling. The leader in sports entertainment for the past 75 years.
Right. You know, so just like there are people that would kill for that. Even if they got buried, they would still embrace that. And I know, you know, you talked about Mike Bennett and Maria, and Mike is so grateful for his opportunity in WWE. He's so, he talks about it all the time.
He does.
You know, and that's awesome, and good luck to him. I hope he wins.
But there's a degree of bitterness in both of their voices.
There are, but...
And I kind of get why. I know why.
But you know what, Jimmy?
But do you always have to go back to it, or well, is it the problem that the interviewer is always going back to it?
Well, that's it. And you ever hear the old line, take the high road? Mike Bennett at least does that. Like, he'll, there's some bitterness, but he takes the high road. He's not going to slam Vince. Publicly, I guess, you know, like really degrade them and go after them. So that's where I think these guys are spoiled and they just don't know when to shut their mouth. But also, you got to think maybe it's the guy up top telling them, hey, go after him. Go after him. Is it Tony Khan saying that? Just giving them the free rein? I don't know.
Cody?
Cody, too. There you go. Mm-hmm. Your boy. So a lot of stuff there to unpack, but it's just spoiled. I'm not going to use that word. Spoiled people to do something along those lines there, and it's a bad look. It's not good.
So my final thought on AEW, the next big thing in AEW is their one-year anniversary of their TNT TV show.
Yep.
Which is going to be headlined by Jon Moxley and Lance Archer for the AEW championship. This is the best match you can come up with for your anniversary show. So Eddie Kingston was a much better pick, in my opinion, because the Eddie Kingston, Jon Moxley promo back and forth would have been great. That's the TV fight, because Eddie Kingston might down the road be a main event guy, but for now, he should have won that battle royal. He should be the number one contender, just so he can rip promos on Jon Moxley, because it'd be good stuff. So we don't get that. But I will tell you a story that does interest me.
Yeah.
The split of the Elite.
Yep.
The Bucks, Omega, and Page seemingly are going on their own going forward. Mm-hmm. The Bucks are now focused on getting the tag titles, and they should win. They're better than FTR.
Yeah.
Like when they get a crack at FTR, they should win, and they should win handily. But they won't. They'll do some 40-minute match, and
they'll put
hopefully
them
it'll be good because the Bucks will be in it. But that FTR, just that, yeah. Page should go for the TV title, and carry. Kenny Omega should have a long winning streak on the singles side and get his shot at Moxley at the November pay-per-view. And it should be Moxley versus Omega for the AEW title, the rematch from last year in Baltimore that Moxley won. And Kenny Omega has to win that match and the championship. And he has to go back to being the New Japan Kenny Omega. I refuse to concede that Kenny Omega is Jerry Lynn, because that comparison has gone right up my mail chute.
Yeah.
Jerry Lynn couldn't hold Kenny Omega's jock on his best day, in my opinion. But I will say this. If Kenny Omega fails on this run in AEW, then I'm wrong. And Kenny Omega is nothing but an indie darling that when the lights were bright, he couldn't cut it. And more so, and more to the point, we'll understand the reasons why the so-called best bout machine didn't get his chance to headline a major promotion like New Japan until 2016 at age 32. And at some point, we might look back at Kenny Omega and realize that his biggest win in the lower 48 states was on June 26th of 2016 when he defeated WWE superstar Xavier Woods in Street Fighter V, which was a video game.
He's such a terrible actor too. He's a terrible actor, Kenny Omega. It's maybe one of the most overrated guys that came into AEW from the start. So this is if this is done, if he doesn't win this, this might be over for him in AEW. I thought that the tag team scenario there with All Out, you know, you kind of saw that coming at midway through that match, the turn there and just getting frustrated and all that. Here we are going back to the independent circuit, but he's got to get something around him to make himself more relevant sooner than later. Otherwise, he's done. He's dipping to the bottom of the ocean.
So, Mike, any closing thoughts here?
I'm still all out on AEW. I was still not happy with that pay-per-view last week. Matt Hardy did come back this week addressing the concussion, so forth, on the show. And I was just really disappointed in the way that was all handled, as we talked about last week. But hearing him come out this week on the show and so forth, kind of covering AEW's ass, just really, I'm still disappointed in the promotion right now and very down on them as we speak. So hopefully they can redeem themselves for myself to, you know, get them back to the top where I had them before, but still not pleased with the way they handled the Matt Hardy situation.
All right, that'll do it for us. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Mike and I will talk to you soon.
Playoff time in the NBA and NHL. Baseball's in full swing, and FanDuel is your place to bet on every game. Right now, new customers get $150 in bonus bets guaranteed. That's $150, win or lose. Bet on everything from slap shots to home runs to slam dunks on an app that's safe, secure, and easy to use. What are you waiting for? Visit FanDuel.com/Fred and make your first bet an automatic win. FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
21 plus and present in Massachusetts. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Hope is here. Gambling helpline ma.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com or call 1-800-GAM-1234.
Hey there, Boston. This is Noah Barney from North Attleboro. This year, I will be running not just one marathon, but I'm attempting to complete all 6 world major marathons. And I'm proud to run the 2024 Boston Marathon to support Boston Scores, an amazing nonprofit that uses soccer and poetry to inspire and empower youth. As a former collegiate soccer player, I am honored to be part of the Boston Scores Marathon team and support free after-school and summer learning programs for 1,500 local students each year. Learn more and support my run today at BostonScores.org/Noah.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? No match for a little DIY duct tape. Shoot, hold on. Nope. There we go. No match for a little... dang it, wait. Duct tape and a wrench. Leaks are no match for duct tape than a wrench. And a bucket and a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tool I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape. Perfect. On second thought, maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
And away go troubles down the drain.